I was thinking about this morning as I came in on the train, and there was a whole bunch of school kids just hanging around, mucking about at the station. You know, they were being young boys. You know, they were having fun, they were interacting. And I think, for me, that's just normal. But for some people, they find young people scary. I don't know why, but they don't seem to understand their language. They don't understand their way of just being. And yeah, they're going to be a bit rough around the edges. And so they should be. They're working out what life's all about. But I stood and listened to their conversations, and I could feel the enthusiasm. And then suddenly you get a gem like, we've got the best day coming up. I've got DT followed by PE followed by, you know, some other subject he was excited about. And I was like, yes, they're mucking about, but they're also really excited about learning. And if you listen to them in the whole, then you get the real picture. And I think that's why young people are being excluded from conversations, because some people just see them as, you know, kind of unformed beings, whereas I see them as people who've got a lot to say. And I knew that if I'd interrupted their conversation and asked them some questions, they would have immediately wanted to engage, because I do that a lot. And it's getting past that sort of awkwardness of I'm an adult and you're a teenager. Once you've got through that, then you can do all sorts of things and have amazing conversations.
When was the last time you heard a teenager being interviewed on TV or radio? Right, this was the question that Camilla Baik asked herself before co-founding Podium.me, which is a platform that aims at empowering young people to express themselves through podcasts, audio and audio dramas. And they share the stories that they care about, the one that matters to them. Camilla is on a mission to help young people feel represented and seen on the media, on the news, and she's here today to share her story and her experience with all of us. So, hello Camilla, thank you so much for being with us today, and yes, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
So, we will discover your story gradually, so I would like to ask you, the first question is, what was your dream when you were younger, what you wanted to do?
I was always asking questions. I'd never met a journalist, so I can't say I dreamt of becoming one, but I was a really curious, quite nosy child, so I was always wanting to know how things worked, what people did, and so I guess my dream job was to be able to ask questions, but I didn't know that that was a profession. So I studied languages because I wanted to know what everyone was saying when I was on the tube or when I was traveling, and so curiosity was really the starting point for all of this.
I think curiosity is the starting point for everyone that has inside this wheel of like wanting to share stories and being a journalist. And so I guess that somehow being a storyteller has always been your call, something, you know, that part of you. And when and how did you decide that you wanted to launch Podium.me?
Well, I started out in television and I was working in educational TV, and I was making programs about Europe and how different organizations work within Europe. And I'd always had this idea of working in radio, but that just hadn't happened when I first graduated from university. So it was a combination of things. I love working with young people. I find them really interesting. I like the fact that they're kind of unfiltered. They haven't yet worked out exactly who they are, so they just say what they think, and that's really refreshing. And I've always loved radio. So there was a sort of perfect storm, really, when the Clapham Junction riots happened at the end of my road, because I could see that the mass media were reporting on this incident and saying, you know, the feral youth and, you know, youth of today are a disaster. And I just thought, hang on a minute, who's actually interviewing the young people involved in this story? Because from what I could see, living near Clapham Junction, there were a lot of people involved in those riots, and they weren't all young. There were people of all ages and stages. So I took it upon myself to start recording interviews with young people that I found down and outside the shops. And what I heard from them was very different from what was being portrayed in the media. So that was the moment when I thought maybe I could do an audio platform for young people. Could have been a radio station, but ended up being a podcast platform, which for us is so much better.
One of the things I like the most about Podium is that you have this policy of no selection, no rejection, and the young people you're working with are free to express themselves and to share the stories that matters to them. So would you like to just Tell me a little bit more about this.
Sure. Most things that you apply for, you have to do an application form. You have to have a certain number of GCSEs or A-level grades or a degree. Those things are great for some jobs, but in journalism, those are not things that we measure aptitude by. We measure it by enthusiasm, by interest, by commitment to something. And so I decided that if someone was brave enough to send an email to a complete stranger and say, I've got an idea that I'd like to pitch, then they're in. You know, like that already takes a lot of initiative. So I reward initiative, I reward commitment, and the people that are great just rise to the top naturally. So I don't have any kind of barriers to entry for podium.me. So as you said, no selection, no rejection. And that policy really works because we end up with fantastic people producing amazing content from a really diverse range of voices, which I don't think you would get if you started cutting people out at an early stage and saying, sorry, I haven't got an English GCSE, you know, above a four, because that's not actually what you need.
I love that. And it's also what I do with Wempower, with all the young journalists that are working with me. They are free to share the stories that they want to share. I don't, you know, we don't judge on that. It's like, you are free, this is your platform, use it as you want. And I think it's something that when I was younger and I was applying for a job in the journalist industry, I miss it. As you say, you know, there are like application form of like pages and pages to fill up. But actually, what about, you know, the talent and the passion? Because they are the two main things will motivate you as a journalist. And, you know, you will wake up every day wanting to go and discover more stories. Then English, everything else, you can learn it. There are skills, but the passion you have inside, that's something else. And, you know, it's what we're missing a bit in the narratives as well that we see every day on the news, no?
You mentioned topics, and we do the same with our topics. So every pitch that gets into my inbox gets made. And so sometimes I might help them to tweak it, or I might say, have you thought about putting another side of the story? Or who are the people you can interview? Let's make sure we get a broad range of views. But who am I to say, oh, we've covered mental health, or we've covered the beauty industry? Like, their story is going to be different from the person's story from last week. So I always say yes to ideas, and I'm constantly surprised by the quality and the kind of the different angles that people come up with, because depending on your own life experience, you're going to have a different way of telling a story depending on who you know, and you know how brave you're going to be. Are you going to talk to complete strangers? Are you going to talk to your siblings? You'll get a different viewpoint. So I'm all about saying yes, no rejection on the story ideas either.
I love this. 100% on board with this, because I think it's the best way as well to get a genuine narrative and interesting perspective, and something that no one else has covered before. So the topic could be the same, but your angle is different than mine. So I love this. Why do you think media are not yet that inclusive towards young people, and what we can do for newsroom and news to be more inclusive in terms of narrative, but also in terms of talents and, you know, career?
I was thinking about this morning as I came in on the train, and there was a whole bunch of school kids just hanging around, mucking about at the station. You know, they were being young boys, you know, they were having fun, they were interacting. And I think, for me, that's just normal. But for some people, they find young people scary. I don't know why, but they don't seem to understand their language. They don't understand their way of just being. And yeah, they're going to be a bit rough around the edges. And so they should be. They're working out what life's all about. But I stood and listened to their conversations, and I could feel the enthusiasm. And then suddenly you get a gem like, we've got the best day coming up. I've got DT followed by PE followed by, you know, some other subject he was excited about. And I was like, yes, they're mucking about, but they're also really excited about learning. And if you listen to them in the whole, then you get the real picture. And I think that's why young people are being excluded from conversations, because some people just see them as, you know, kind of unformed beings, whereas I see them as people who've got a lot to say. And I knew that if I'd interrupted their conversation and asked them some questions, they would have immediately wanted to engage, because I do that a lot. And it's getting past that sort of awkwardness of I'm an adult and you're a teenager. Once you've got through that, then you can do all sorts of things and have amazing conversations.
And in practice, as, I don't know, tools or initiative, what a newsroom can do to bring more young voice on board?
Have an open discussion time. Have forums, places for people to give their ideas, encourage young people to send in voice notes with their opinions on the stories of that day. Just basically have channels that are really accessible, whether they're remote or in person, and take on board what they're saying. Don't set up a program that can be a little bit patronizing, like, oh, we're going to hear from young people now. You know, make them part of the conversation that the adults are having a conversation about. It's the same conversation, just people at different stages in their lives. So there's a lot that newsrooms can do, and they are starting to do it. So I've been working with the World Service, and they invited some of our young journalists in to talk about a fabulous new podcast that they're putting out. So, you know, I think that they're realising more and more they want those young listeners or young viewers or young readers to enjoy their content. So in order to do that, they have to engage with them first. Otherwise, young people will just go somewhere else.
Obviously. And I guess also working with young people gave you an idea and a better understanding of how they consume news as well, which is completely different from other generations. So do you have any insights to share? And what can we do as journalists and a newsroom to provide news that they are more attractive for a younger audience?
Every 2 years it changes. So if I ask a 21-year-old, their answer will be different from a 19-year-old and different from a 17-year-old. So some want local news. They want to know where new shops are opening in their high street. Other people want global news. They want to know solutions-based news. They want to know how the world has positive things happening as well as negative stuff, because otherwise they just switch off, don't we all? I mean, we've been overloaded with negative stories, so we need to have some solutions. And I think the news companies that are doing well, the ones that are slowing it down a little bit and coming up with some really creative ways of talking about stories, and they also want to be included in that discussion and not feel that things are set in stone. So I think, you know, engaging news, so something like TikTok is a really good medium for getting stories out. Now, I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, it's just short form and it's not, you know, not serious hard news, but there's some incredible stuff. The news movement, they're doing wonderful social first news and, you know, short sound bites where you're really finding things out. So I think look at all the platforms, do a bit of everything, but be authentic. And yeah, I think that's the way to get young people listening.
You mentioned TikTok, and I just remember one of the first conversations we had the first day we met, of like how we look for inspiration online, you know, just how we would spend hours just on TikTok trying to understand trends. And for us, we are a few generations, you know, of difference between me and you, but also between the young people you work with, it can be very challenging sometimes, you know, to understand all of these changes. And how do you adjust? And what did you learn as well with this, you know, with Podium, with all this social media platform, from the young people you work with, on how we can use as well social media to for news, for information?
Well, everyone uses it differently, and that's great. It's like a paintbrush. If I give you a paintbrush, and I have a paintbrush, and I give one to someone else, and we all look at the same thing, we will draw it differently, because we see it differently, we express ourselves in different ways. And I think social media is exactly the same. It's just a paintbrush that you can say, oh, you can tell your story in the way, the language that you feel comfortable in. I can tell it in mine, but I can look at yours and appreciate what you've done, and you can look at mine. And so I think the platform isn't important. It's how we're using it. Hmm. So, yeah, that would be my answer. It's not rocket science. I can go to all different kinds of art galleries and appreciate different art. I don't have to stick to one.
And a question more on the entrepreneurial side of Podium.me, because you used to work for others before, and then Podium is your business. Things that you learn, challenge that you have to face, and I don't know, some of maybe the key moments that they are, you know, paved this journey for you.
My co-founder was very ambitious, and I thank her so much for that, because she would say, we always go to the top of an organization. If we need advice, we go to the top. And so she made sure that we met, you know, the commissioning editor for Radio 4, or, you know, the head of a big media company to get some pro bono advice on graphic design, that sort of thing. And so as an entrepreneur, I would never call myself that, but I've learned that actually it's okay to ask, because generally people want to help. So we've held our training days at the Google offices, at Reuters offices, at BBC Salford offices. So And we've just asked, and they've said, yeah, we'd love to have young people. So it's given me a lot more confidence being an entrepreneur and realizing that I'm doing it on behalf of a whole load of people that I'm bringing with me. I'm not asking for me, I'm asking for them. And generally, people are really, really helpful.
Just to connect with this, you know, asking for others, we touch in all the other interviews that I had for this series, we talk a lot about mentorship and sponsorship and the importance that they have on the life of a journalist, and I think even moreover for young journalists. So what's your take on this and your experience, and is there any mentoring program maybe that Podium is working on, or you are in collaboration with someone else, you know, anything to add to this?
Well, we do work in partnership with other young news organizations like News Decoder based in Paris, and we've done some stuff with Alpha Nar Media and in Arabic. And so the whole thing is mentoring, because actually you can do peer-to-peer mentoring as well as mentoring with someone who has more experience than you. So I'm constantly putting together groups, maybe they're small WhatsApp groups, maybe they're international groups, saying, okay, you're in Yemen and you want to cover student life. This person's in Birmingham, they want to cover student life. Why don't you two talk to each other and come up with a podcast that compares your experiences? Mm-hmm. And so sponsorship, mentoring, getting people talking, networking, all of those things are a massive part of getting into a career, finding out about job opportunities. LinkedIn is amazing as another place for promoting people's work. So I'm often looking through, seeing what are my young journalists up to outside of Podium? How can I elevate their work and get it in front of someone else? I made a connection this week with someone from the World Service who used to be a Chevening scholar, and then one of our interns who's based in Nigeria was also a Chevening scholar, 10 years difference. And so I said to them both, you know, you guys should talk. Woman's from Sri Lanka, now working in London. So it's kind of having an eye above it all. It's like sitting above it all and going, oh, great, yeah, let's put those people together and watch what happens, the creative sparks.
From your conversation and exchanges with young people, what are the challenges that they are facing to enter a career in journalism right now in this
It's the same as the challenges we're all facing, I think. You know, AI is what everyone is talking about right now. And, you know, are the jobs going to disappear? Who can be a local radio host when you've got, you know, some kind of chatbot that can take the place of a real person sitting there in front of the microphone? So I think journalism is changing. I think authenticity is king. We need to know that the people we're working with are trustworthy and real, and they are telling the truth. And I think society needs to be aware of what is coming and what is already here, and you know how to discern reality from fiction or fake news. So they face the same challenges as every journalist, and I suppose coming into the industry, maybe they've got an advantage because they are more likely to know what the current trends are, perhaps, mm-hmm. because they're growing up with the social media, you know, digital native world.
Exactly.
And they will find ways of navigating that. I have no doubt that they will find ways. And real people, we're still here. We're here to stay. So they will find a role.
Yes. And what advice would you give to a young person that would come to you and say, hey, Camilla, you know, I want to become a journalist?
First, I would ask them, are you writing at the moment? Are you recording? Do you have a YouTube channel? What are you making? Are you on TikTok? And depending on what they're creating in those spaces, I would be able to say to them, well, you are a journalist. You know, you're finding stories and you are helping to tell those stories to other people. So I'm all about you are what you're doing. If they said they wanted to be a journalist and weren't doing any of those things, I would question whether journalism was really for them. Because as you mentioned earlier, it's a passion that you wake up with every morning saying, I want to tell stories. So if you're not doing it, you know, maybe it's not for you.
True. And you know that When Power is all about stories of ordinary, extraordinary women that are changing the world. And this series specifically is dedicated to the invisible stories of the women behind the news. And I asked this question to all the other guests, and it's, what are you most hopeful about for the future of women in the news?
Women bring a different perspective to men, perhaps. I mean, I personally have never experienced any kind of discrimination or issues of inequality in my career life, but I know that a lot of people have, and I think making sure we don't stereotype the kind of stories that we cover is really important. I was thinking about this in terms of authors as well. Women tend to read both male and female authors. As far as I know, I don't think men read many female authors. So that's an issue. And why is that happening? And so I think we just need to be really aware that what we cover is broad enough and accessible enough for all members of society. And it would be great if we had more men covering more generic female topics and vice versa. I mean, look at women's football. It's been amazing at how we've got incredible female football commentators. We didn't have that just a few years ago. So I think things are really changing. But if the men could start to, you know, cover some of the more female-related topics, I think that would really change things too.
So a bit more of allyship, you know, and other keywords together with mentoring, sponsorship, allyship, not just, you know, between diverse groups, but also, you know, between men and women to support this change that is really necessary if we want a narrative that is more inclusive and diverse and is actually talking to everyone and is interesting for everyone. So otherwise, then news organization, they will lose money as well. It's, you know, if we want to talk about turnovers and impact. So it's really, really important. Actually, I want to ask you another question about artificial intelligence, just because we had this conversation on the sofa before we came into the studio, and you already mentioned it could be, it's a threat, it's threatening somehow, and it's one of the challenges that the young people or journalists right now have to face that we didn't have maybe 20 years ago when we started. So what are your thoughts about artificial intelligence and the way it can, you know, work with journalists? Is 100% a threat? Do you see any opportunities? Or
I can see that it saves time if you're researching something and you need to, you know, sort of get enough stuff from the internet and put it all together in a digestible form. But the important thing then is that you edit, you fact check, you go through all of whatever's been fed to you by ChatGPT or whatever else, and you double check all those things for yourself. I think there's a danger that laziness could step in and you go, great, right, homework done, or, you know, article written, without checking it. So it's here and it's not going to go away. And like anything new, obviously we're going to be a little bit fearful of it, but we need to learn to work with it and realise that we have a discerning brain that, you know, hopefully will put some sort of moral parameters around things and truth parameters, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's a learning curve. And, you know, if we're talking in a year's time, we'll probably have a different opinion, but
I'm pretty sure that in a year time there will be something else we're worrying about for the future of journalism. But right now, this is all over the place, you know, all over the news, and everyone is talking about. And it's, I think, it's a threat in terms of, you know, our jobs is replaceable. So maybe in the future we're gonna have a robot running all the news media outlet. I hope no. I hope we're still gonna be here to share the stories, and to have human and in real life interaction with people. I think that's what really changed and gives the narrative a completely different, you know, take.
Well, as you said, actually it's impossible to replace, because someone's got to get the initial information, and you only get that by having a conversation one-to-one with a real person. So journalism will survive, without a doubt, because a robot can't replace building networks and relationships in the way that people can.
That's true. But the stories, maybe we need to watch out for that. Yeah. To conclude this interview, I want to tell you all a little bit more about Camilla, because Camilla is not just a journalist and the founder of Podium, but I have a long list of things that Camilla does. So a little bit of a glimpse behind the scene of Camilla life. So she, I consider her a polymath. She's been educated as a linguist, she told us at the beginning. She's an amateur artist. We mentioned a painting brush as well, so that was a hint. She's a poet, a footballer, a teacher, and a photographer. And she's been trained as a breastfeeding supporter. She's a mother of three amazing girls. And she's a sailor, a walker, ex-violist, and gospel choir member. I mean, I think I can continue the list here. First, my question is, how do you find the time and the inspiration to do all of these things? I know that you're not going to do everything at the same time, but it's impressive. So please tell me, what's your secret?
I just don't do anything very well. I think I love to try stuff. I'm a real trier. And my mum had this amazing phrase she'd say to us all as we were growing up. If we saw anyone doing anything, she'd say, you could do that. You could do that. And, you know, I don't play the violin anymore. Football was definitely a short-lived thing. But, you know, a lot of stuff, I'm just constantly wanting to learn. I've got a whole list of things that I want to try and start doing. So that list is not exhaustive. You know, things fall off the list when they're not that great for me. But, you know, I keep going. And I think that's what keeps you motivated. It's certainly fantastic for finding story ideas. You know, if you're busy doing unusual things all the time, you get inspiration for your work as well. So yeah, it works for me. I'm just, you know.
So you're telling me that if I interview or I see you again in a year time, we're going to have either a longer list or you scratch something out of the list, because done that, I'm discovering something new. Amazing. Mm-hmm. I like it. I want to finish this interview in a very different way, because Camilla is a poet and she loves to write poems. And we wanted to share one that is particularly relatable to what we are reading and seeing in the news right now, and what you can actually even see on the streets of the city where you live. And we're talking about migration. And specifically, I mean, you can give a little bit of background on the poem as well yourself, but we thought that this was a very inspiring story and poem to share with all of you.
The story behind this is I did an interview with a young girl from Eritrea who had come by herself to the UK through a very difficult route, taking over 2 years. And I was on holiday when I wrote this poem, and I had all my stuff that I needed for my holiday in my bag, in my suitcase. And I reflected on the fact that I was really enjoying just having one bag. And then I realized what a luxury that was. And we've also had a lady from Ukraine living with us for the last year and a half. And there are some teenagers from Ukraine living on our street. So I feel connected with people who've migrated for lots of different reasons. And the teenagers that I spoke to, they told me they'd come with one rucksack. So this poem is inspired by my attitude to my bag and for them. It's all in my bag. It's not in the cupboard. It's not in the loft. It's just safe in my bag. Makes me feel safe too, knowing I've got it all in the bag. Get a bag. Well, perhaps a few bags. Some have just one bag, a rucksack they took. No backwards look. To get away as far as they could, running away, hoping to go back one day.
Thank you for sharing this, and thank you so much for being with us today to share your story, to inspire us to embrace uncertainty sometimes and to discover new things. And thank you so much.
Thanks, Alara.